and getting a letter of support from town leadership. The schedule, as I've mentioned a couple times, we had the outreach training on the 6th. Call for projects opens this week. The two pre-submittal meetings, the way they've set out, or the way they've set those up, is to allow applicants to meet before the holiday season, discuss any questions they have about the application process, and get some of their scope and key details worked out with whoever they're working with, and then have a second meeting or a second window to meet with Campo staff in January before the application deadline in January 25th.
So, Pitt, can I interrupt you? But back to that slide. So the call for projects, November 29, 2018. We're in that boat right now. Is that right?
Yes, that will it will open this week, and we've seen a preliminary application. The form, the way it would look like, there's about 12 to 15 questions that we have to answer. That is the application itself, and then along with that, we'll have to have some supporting materials like the scope of work that we might have with a consultant.
And you're the point person on this, right?
Yes, I will.
Yeah.
And so basically they would have the scores and submissions in the January-February timeframe and have some reviews in February. By April, we would be aware of selection for the project. So for council action, we're really just looking for agreement on moving forward with completing some of the sections of the application process, coordinating with our on-call consultant to finalize and develop the scope of work, a draft budget, and total planning study costs, and participating in the Campo pre-submittal meetings to get further clarification on what we're recommending to do and bring it back to council in January at one of the January meetings to present the details of the scope of work as well as what project costs we might have.
So all you really need is a thumbs up from everybody. Everybody okay with it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, Jeff Friedenberg. UDO and 1802 Planning Director.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council Members.
Good evening.
Today, we just have the introduction. I went ahead and drafted those some proposed language for everybody to start looking at and provided some examples from other communities as to what they require regarding neighborhood meetings. For those items that come before you as a public hearing. So this would be things like rezonings, special use permits, conditional use permits, and the like. Currently, I think as many of you are aware, we are strongly suggesting that folks do this already. So really, this is just kind of putting down on paper what we've been asking folks to do already. I tried to keep it as simple as possible and concise, but covering all the main points of what needs to be accomplished during one of these meetings. This is not something that staff would typically be expected to attend. I'm not aware of other communities that do that, particularly since we haven't necessarily done all the reviews at that point, and our recommendation comes much later in the process. This is really truly about getting the proposed developer in touch with the residents in the area and getting some feedback early on, so that hopefully we get better proposals by the time that it comes to you for a vote. Again, there's language in there from some of the other communities. Some of them are very, very detailed, and others like Wake Forest were very, almost, I think, maybe too concise. But that being said, most of the consulting firms that I've talked with recently are very familiar with having to go through this process. It's not something that they're unfamiliar with. They just may not have to do it everywhere at this point, but it's not been perceived as something overly onerous or something that folks generally aren't willing to do. So if you have any questions about this, I'm happy to try to address those at this time, but this would simply be inserting this language at the appropriate location in the ordinance, which I believe to be section 3.1Q, and then we'll just bump everything else after back.
Jeff, I don't want to get into parsing language here, but I'm, I guess, wanting to hear your, or whether or not folks who are required to do this. It says under procedure, applicants shall conduct said neighborhood meetings in a place generally accessible to neighbors living in close proximity to the land subject to the application. I assume that's, well, it's open to interpretation in terms of who gets notified, how close they have to be, or what the requirement is there. Is that?
We probably could just insert a little reference there to the following section under notification. What we've anticipated there and what we've asked folks to do to date is just to use the same notification list that we are required to do for the public hearing. Mm-hmm. So that way it should be the same mailing list unless somebody sells their property in between time.
Yeah, it makes sense to me that kind of criteria would be used. That way there's no question about
right
who should be included and who shouldn't be, I guess. Okay.
Well, thank Jeff for bringing this forward. I met with Jeff and John and Dean Fox, the Planning Commission, a few months back. We talked about several issues, and this was a concern that they had. And I asked staff then, I said, hey, go ahead and bring something to us. I don't think the council's going to say no to this. I think it's going to probably be unanimous thumbs up to get this in place to require people, because in most cases people have been kind and have done the neighborhood meetings, but y'all have had to do some arm twisting in some cases, and we shouldn't have to do that. So thanks for bringing it forward. Now, I agree with what Mr. Marston said, maybe put the language in there to clarify who they need to make sure they contact.
Good job.
Jeff, it's off of this subject a little bit, but I know that we do, whenever an application comes in, the planning department makes a presentation. And is that typical in other municipalities, or just does the developer make presentations sometimes?
When it gets to the public hearing stage?
Mm-hmm.
Almost always, everywhere that I've been, the staff always gives the initial presentation.
Staff does it, okay.
Yeah.
My thoughts were if the developer were giving it, he might get a better feel for what the community thinks about what he's doing.
Right,
thank
right.
You.
It's kind of our opportunity to introduce it and discuss how it got to where it got, the comments that we've been back and forth with them on, and then, of course, them having the opportunity to come up and clarify or expand further if they don't feel we've addressed it.
Clarification, it may be mentioned here, and I've missed it, but would the town usually be responsible if the developer comes and says, you know, we need a meeting place? That does the town determine where the meeting place is going to be? Or
that's usually, in all the cases that I'm familiar with, they're left to find that space on their own.
Okay.
You know, it's always good. We can always refer if they're having trouble finding a location. We could, for example, refer them over to Parks and Rec to see if any of their facilities are available. But most often,
neighborhood clubhouse or
neighborhood
something like
clubhouses
that.
Or churches have been very receptive to working with folks.
Yeah,
so.
Good.
All right. Any more questions, comments? Okay, we'll move to number four. Actually, number three. Tony Beasley and John Hodges.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. Appreciate the opportunity to be before you tonight. The request that we have on the work session tonight is filled for the inspector position. You know, we've had continued steady growth, 2 to 3-fold growth. Our field inspector totals are still pre-recession levels. And then with all the legislative changes that came about, you know, we sort of struggled to maintain the legislative guidelines and meet our customer demands. And y'all were very gracious to give us a full-time position in the 17-18 budget. Took us 9 months to find that person who had no field experience but had done what he needed to do at the community college to be able to be a qualified candidate. He's doing a great job for us. He's been here 6 months now. So he's doing a great job for us. During that budget process last year, we had asked for an additional $20,000 to help supplement our supplemental, and y'all approved us to hire a second supplemental position. And we moved forward with that, but since the budget was adopted last year, Amazon did announce. So I'm losing about 6 hours a day to Amazon from one of our field inspectors right now. You know, and we really haven't got the big crust of it. So he and I are sort of doing that project along with our fire. So that sort of left us a little bit of void in the commercial area, but we've been, everybody's been stepping up to the plate. All of our guys are doing a great job. So our supplemental position that was advertised, it's been open for over 90 days. We've had a little over 780 page views. We had 8 applications, and not a single one of the 8 applications met even the minimum requirements. When I say minimum requirements, that's truly the minimum requirements. They didn't meet it. So we're trying to figure out where we need to be. If we go to the marketplace and use the marketplace inspectors, then we're just contracting by the hour with different people. Don't know consistency, how often we can keep them, where they're traveling from, and what our total expense would be. But that don't meet our long-term need. So as I said in the background, you know, we've been looking at it for 3 or 4 months. There were 3 months now going on the 4th month. The local hiring conditions in the Triangle region are still horrendous for all the inspection parks, even field positions, full-time or part-time. So we needed to sort of look at maybe what our long-term need would be. That was the reason I was here tonight. So what I'd like to do with the council's permission is we would like to convert our supplemental position to a full-time position. I know it's a mid-year adjustment, it's a staffing change, and it's a budget change. The rest of the paragraph, I won't get into all the intricate details about the financial numbers, but they're in your memo and I can answer them. But we do have revenues that are above budgeted revenues, plus we had the Amazon money come in. And so we were asking for that. We met with Mr. Franks, assistant manager, John Hodges, and with Rodney early on, and talked about it a little bit, and with Pam Hodges, and we came up that, you know, we feel financially we're in a good position for that. And while we were looking at all this, we were brought to our attention that I have a field inspector that's anticipating retiring next year in September. So that really sort of made it a little bit more astute to us, that if it's taken us 6 to 9 months to hire somebody with no experience, and I really need somebody with some building and commercial experience, that I need to get some, try to get that full-time person on board, you know, and we're asking for a mid-year position, but, you know, we might not be able to fill it till May, I don't know, but if I could fill it January, it would be great. But that's sort of the gist of the whole thing. But just one thing that wasn't in your memo, but just to give you an idea a little bit on our workload, because I had to provide these numbers for finance to put into CAFR. In 15-16, we did 5,244 inspections, 300 fire, 1,200 permits. 16-17 budget year, we did 7,619 inspections, 500 fire inspections for maintenance, and we wrote 1,324 permits. And on the inspections, take into account the number of apartments, because we don't have software that tracks the 24 units. So we might spend a whole day in a building and get credit for 4 inspections. 17-18, our last physical year for the CAFR, we did 11,608 inspections. And we didn't have the new person during that time frame. I mean, our guys are working to the end. We did 824 fire maintenance inspections, and we wrote 1,531 permits. So, you know, we're busy. We continue to be busy. And, you know, part of my job be a good steward for your services and our town monies and our town resources to make sure we're prepared to handle what's out there and to try to look ahead of it. And that's what we've done. And due to the time frame and what we would do if even if we're approved and if we hire somebody is, you know, we'll reevaluate it when the other person retires. You know, because that person's indicated they might work part-time. So, we, you know, we can reevaluate it, but we feel that there's a need to do that. So our recommendation would be that y'all give us permission to come back at, on a consent agenda with whatever the proper forms has to be from HR to allow us to increase our staffing level to a full-time position. And whatever budget adjustment, the numbers are in here that we calculated, would be the worst-case scenario. For a budget adjustment, and allow us to try to move forward with that recruitment. I'll answer any questions you have. BD's here. He can tell you about the recruiting issues we've had. John's over there. He can answer more on the financial side with revenue that Michael and them have worked with on the numbers. I'll answer any questions you have. We're just trying to prepare ourselves and ask for some help.
Question.
Tony, I will certainly support your recommendation, which as I understand it would be to, at least for now, to convert the supplemental into a full-time position. And then we'll reevaluate when the person in your department retires. But anyway, you said, I believe, that a recent hiree was from the community college system. Is that right? I was just going to ask you, is that going to be a hopefully a good resource. I know
to answer your question, Council Marshman, we're working hard with our community college systems to try to prepare the Department of Insurance based on a legislative push from Representative Brody. We're working hard with community colleges to try to make sure that they're offering some kind of apprentice or a training program. We're offering more inspection classes for folks to get pre-qualified, and that's still a growing curve. I mean, we're not unique in North Carolina. In Richmond at our ICC conference, they already have a national mentorship program right now. North Carolina is not part of that because we're not part of accepting ICC certificates by right, but Virginia has embraced it where they're hiring people, high school kids actually, and are putting them through training classes. When they graduate high school, they're pre-qualified. They don't have any field experience, but they're pre-qualified to try to put them into a career. And like the city of Richmond's hired two this year right out of high school that they're going to train for a year and then make them full-time. They're trying to pay them enough when they graduate, the same rate they would make as a construction worker, just to get them on and to train them. But they're graduating high school with ICC certificates. So, and we're working with our community colleges to try to understand that same need, because at our conference nationally, 75% of the national workforce can retire in the next 15 years.
Is a community college training, is that like a, is it a two-year associate's degree?
Right now it's not. I mean, they do have construction management programs. What we're trying to do is get them, there was a nice article, our inspector was in the town of Garner, was highlighted in the Wake Community Colleges, Wake Tech's brochure about 2 months ago, I think it was Rick and them helped with that story, because this was a career change. Here's a, you know, midlife person who decided he wanted a new career, and he chose that career to be inspection. So he went through the community college system, took the basic code classes that we are all required to have, and took the law and admin classes on his own, and then took the state exams to get pre-qualified so that he told the town, I'm really, really interested in this career. And it gave him a good base understanding of the codes, not necessarily field applications. But he had some other attributes that stood out, not only with longer standards, when we chose to interview him and hire him. And it really has proved to be a success. And so the community college is touting him for those to try to get pre-qualified. You have a lot of folks that will apply to the state for pre-qualification, and the state sends them a letter and it says, Mr. Marshman, you got a 4-year degree. Therefore, since you have a 4-year degree, and you worked at Lowe's Hardware Store for 6 months, your degree will allow us to tell you you can get 4 level 1 probationary certificates. And that's all it says. It's because you have a 4-year degree, they say you're trainable. But it doesn't say that you took the initiative to go to the community college and take all the required courses to help make those qualifications happen. And that's what we're trying to do right now, is get people that, find people that were willing, just especially for entry-level positions, find people willing to go through that community college system and take those basic courses so they have an understanding of what they're looking at. And so that's where we're still pushing, and we're hoping that the new Wake Tech has really embraced it. We got three community colleges across the state that have really embraced this, and they're trying to push forward some kind of apprentice or certification program to help the towns try to fill some of those positions.
I guess sort of the intended in that question somewhere is the idea that if you can hire from those kinds of folks, you're not having to, compete or look to hire people from other towns in the regions.
Right. For your entry-level position, that's true. It's Johnston County just re-advertised a position that took out all the requirements for any experience. They're willing just to take somebody that can come through the door to pre-qualify for something and just train them right now for residential. But for this position, we're going to specifically try to recruit somebody with commercial experience, because that's the level of what we'll be losing when our inspector retires.
Anything else?
I don't think I have any other questions.
Good luck, Tony.
I'm in favor and support of it.
Yeah, let's do it.
I want to know, when you referred to Pam Hodges, were you referring to John Hodges or Pam?
I meant John Hodges and Pam Wortham. I've been in a lot of meetings with Pam today on some other issues with the city of Raleigh. Thank you for clarification of that. No new people married, I promise.
Thank you.
All right, thank y'all.
Sure. Rick Kelly.
We'll bring that back for, do we need to do anything official? Well, I guess we'll bring that back as a position adjustment. At a later meeting.
No. Okay. Just bring it back on consent.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. Or should I say, long time no see. I think it's been about 7 years since I've been in front of you guys. Probably for the best, because IT and great public speaking don't really go hand in hand together, so I apologize ahead of time.
But you have a suit, you look nice.
Right, thank you, appreciate it. Haven't dusted off, I guess. Hopefully this won't take too much of your time. What we'd like to do tonight is take you through a presentation that will hopefully provide you with a better understanding of where we are as an IT department and where we want to be in the future. I will take the time to say that this presentation and proposal is a product of an ongoing collaboration with members of the budget team, HR, town management, just in case this ends up being a train wreck. I do have a spot at the end for questions, but if you have any questions during this presentation, feel free to stop me. Let me go ahead and put this up here. We've entitled this presentation, Building on Today and Planning for the Future of IT, hence the carpentry theme. What we'd like to cover in this presentation is a brief history of our IT department, the technology advances that we've seen in the past several years, our budget history and trends, our IT staffing levels, our future vision for the department, and proposed changes to accomplish that vision, along with a wrap-up at the end. In the first section, we'd like to cover a brief history of the IT department by outlining a few key areas that have had high impact on the IT department. I've had the privilege of being here for over 11 years, and one of the major areas that impacted our IT department was a staffing reduction that happened back in 2010 and 2011. At that time, the IT director and two other IT specialist positions resigned. After those resignations, Rodney actually took over for the IT director, and we did not backfill for those two IT specialist positions. It was around that same time that we in engineering actually lost our administrative support position. Some of you remember Kathy Reynolds, used to serve as a deputy clerk as well. She was originally filling a role for us as administrative support, and she handled most of our IT financial work at that time as well. The image to the top right of your screen on the slide depicts kind of where we were after we lost two of those positions, and shortly after that, shortly after that staffing reduction, we had a leadership transition back in 2012 when I was promoted to the IT director position. At that time, we reevaluated the roles and responsibilities that were distributed throughout the department due to the staffing reductions. And with assistance from the MAPS group, we decided to reclassify one of those senior IT or IT specialist positions to a senior IT specialist positions. And that basically aligned it with the other senior IT positions in the area. So the org chart to the bottom right is where we're at today. So with that reclassification, we were able to introduce requirements for specific IT certifications for that position. And because of that additional training, we were able to end an ongoing network support contract that led to an annual savings of over $40,000. This was obviously a great financial benefit to the town, but it also meant an increase in IT staff responsibilities. Another key area we often struggle with in IT is retention. Over the past 8 years, we've seen a turnover rate of about 1.5 years. The IT industry in general has seen a tremendous amount of growth over the past decade, which caused local governments like ours to have retention difficulties due to the lack of career progression and as well as higher pay gaps compared to similar jobs in the private sector. Last year, we actually lost someone that had over 10 years of experience with the town, which accounted for about 45% of our total town IT experience. So that kind of gives you just a history of that. We also have been impacted by the new town facilities that have come on board. Each of these facilities actually requires about 6 to 8 months of IT preparation and implementation work. And IT often gets overlooked during these type of projects, but there's a considerable amount of work that's done behind the scenes in order to have these facilities be ready to open with minimal to no servicing disruption. One of the positives impact to our IT workload has been the addition of the part-time police / IT position. We were able to take advantage of a unique opportunity where we were able to fill this position with a police retiree that had several years of IT-type experience. It was because of this person's lengthy experience that we were comfortable with moving forward with a part-time position rather than a full-time need that was originally identified by the IT department. However, with the hour limitations of the part-time position and certain scheduling issues that we're running into, our staff, IT staff, is supplementing that workload in a larger capacity than originally anticipated. We did the numbers today, and roughly about 38% of that workload we're actually handling because we're having some scheduling issues and weekly hourly where he approaches his max on the week. Another positive impact to our IT department has been the recent adoption of the IT Equipment Replacement Fund. This fund provides stability to our budget and allows us to extend the life of our equipment, which reduces our yearly IT costs. So although this is not every aspect that has impacted IT, hopefully it gives you a brief history and a reminder of some of the changes that we've seen over the years. This next section will be identifying a few technology changes that have impacted our IT department. The chart to the right shows the amount of equipment growth we've seen in the past 7 years. The 2011 totals are when we had 5 IT staff members and a part-time administrative support. The 2018 totals are with 3 IT staff members and a part-time police IT position. So as you can see, we've seen a tremendous amount of growth over the past 7 years in just our equipment alone. Along with those increases in equipment, we've also added new building technologies that we are now supporting within the IT department, including Wi-Fi, access control, which is the door badging systems. We now support 4 camera systems, security camera systems, and a 5th coming on board with the new recreation center. We have smart TVs, we have a cell repeater system, we have new presentation technology. As this week, we had to replace the bulbs, as you guys probably know. We're now venturing into video streaming. Rick can probably tell you a little bit about that, but several of those things have been added to our plate, as well as all this equipment changes. Each of these, new technologies require periodic maintenance and a large amount of IT time to actually deploy and or replace those systems. We also provide IT support for several hosted or off-site software applications that we did not have in the past. These include the office applications that are now hosted, and email, the town website, our evaluation software, job posting software, the fleet maintenance software, one that you guys are familiar with, the citizen request software, public stuff, parks and rec programs and shelter reservations, etc. We could probably go on for a while on those, but we're obviously supporting those technologies. Another change we've seen over the years has been the advancement of our phone and network circuits that connect to our town facilities together. These circuits require more active monitoring and advanced configuration changes. So with all this growth, you're probably asking, how have we been able to keep up with that? One of the main reasons is the virtualization technology that came out of the cloud. And this was actually the topic of our last time I was in front of you over 7 years ago. So I'll not go into the details of virtualization for the sake of time, but I will say that it's proven to be a great investment, that it was approved by council and now has become an industry standard, and allows us to be more efficient as an IT department. However, this new technology comes with a higher level of understanding and responsibility from the IT staff. In the next 3 slides, I'd like to show you a brief budget history and trend summary. In this first slide here, I'm hoping to show you the reasoning that ultimately led us to recommending the IT equipment replacement fund. Back in 2013, I worked closely with the budget manager to put together a portion of the spreadsheet is listed to the right there. The budget team used this tool to help identify all of our major IT equipment and our software in an effort to properly forecast replacement costs. This spreadsheet allowed us to be more transparent as a department and provided accurate budget forecasting, which we did not have in the past. But over time, as the spreadsheet actually had to be adjusted based on budget cuts, and which led to delayed replacements. So what you see to the right in the colors there, of yellow, orange, and red, were things that slowly got to be pushed back, and the indicator of how the importance of it was indicated by yellow being lower importance, orange being medium, and red being high. So not to get into the details of each individual one of those, but those delayed replacements led us back to roller coaster budgets that we had in the past. So this is what kind of led us to recommending the equipment replacement fund last year, and this replacement fund has allowed us to set aside money on a yearly basis so we can kind of level out that budget and extend life of our equipment.
Brett, quick question there. I guess it maybe is a comment. But anyway, under the heading of lifespan that you've listed down through there, my layman's understanding would be that in the IT world, devices or equipment doesn't necessarily wear out in the sense that you drive a vehicle 500,000 miles and it's worn out, but that has more to do with the changes in the technological world and the need to upgrade and update. Is that correct?
Yes, that, and we typically, a lot of this stuff has maintenance contracts behind it. So if it broke, we would replace it and have no cost to that maintenance. The problem with that is that those maintenance contracts expire at a, and those they won't be supporting that type of equipment anymore, so you're out. So we typically go based upon what's called that end of life support contract, essentially. Others are just wear and tear or technology advances. Obviously, if you have a laptop that you purchased 5 years ago, it's not going to be enough to keep up with today's, you know. So some of that is just outdating, and some of that is based on IT support contracts. So it's a best guesstimate. But with that actual equipment replacement fund, what we're allowed to do in some certain situations is actually, if the equipment is working just fine, we actually get to wait until it dies, because we know now that we have funding set aside for a replacement, rather than trying to proactively replace it before it's end of life or before it's done. We're actually able to, in some certain situations with a few of these, just wait until they expire. So that's where we extend the life of the actual equipment. Good question. This next slide is outlining our budget trend since I've been the director for the past 6 years, compared to the average of our other town departments. There are obviously several factors that go into effect that affect this trend, but we thought it was important to show this graph to depict that we're not following the same trend as the town average. If we show the lines at the same starting point, you kind of get a better idea of the trend differences. A more telling story of these graphs is listed on the next slides that will actually show us how we stack up with Wake County IT departments. So these graphs show the municipal budget trends in Wake County for the past 5 years based on the available online budgets that we had access to. As you can see, and these are the ones that actually have IT departments, so smaller ones like Roseville and Wendell don't actually have IT departments, and Clayton, they sub out their IT. So these are the actual departments that actually have IT shops in them. So as you can see, obviously our budget trend down at the bottom right does not follow the same trends as our neighbors right now. Again, there's several factors that contribute to these trends, but hopefully this gives you an idea of the trends that we're seeing throughout the county and IT industry as a whole. So in these next two slides, we'd like to give you a quick look at our IT staffing levels and trends. The staffing history is from the past 10 years and how we stack up versus other town departments. As you can see, we kind of trended down with the town average back in 2010, 2011, during our staff reductions, but we've not been able to kind of rebound at the same rate as the town average. Again, if we line up these lines, you can probably better see the trend a little bit better. So there are several reasons that contribute to this trend, but again, as town staff increases, so does the need for IT support. So as we did with the budgets, we're going to go to the next slide, which is how we stack up to Wake County averages. As you can see here, a little bit different slide because some of these are only increasing by one or two positions, but you can see that other municipalities have increased. All municipalities have increased their staff levels over the past 5 years, and this graph depicts that how others are addressing their growing technology needs and advancements. And you can pretty much infer that these increases kind of correlate to the increases that we saw in their budgets as well. Obviously, you add staff, their budgets are going to go up as well. So on this next slide, we just want to show you a few additional roles that we want to incorporate within the IT department. One of the most urgent roles that we've identified is the need for a project management role. We'd like to be a good resource to other departments in order to assist with project deployments. There are several technology projects, both software and hardware related, where it makes sense for IT to take that lead role and relieve other departmental staff to focus on their regular duties. This should help assist in a successful and timely project deployments. This is especially evident in technology projects involving multiple departments, such as the new development services software. Another role that we've had not had time to incorporate is long-term strategy for the IT department. We're relying way too much on year-to-year planning, and not nearly enough time is spent on long-term strategy. This was actually in an area identified by town management when I was promoted to IT director, but because of our limited resources, we haven't been able to accomplish this in the capacity that we would like. And we also have a need for director assistance and succession planning. I'm currently the only person in our department who handles budgeting, programming, finances, supervision, and management. It would be great assistance if these tasks could be delegated to provide career progression opportunities and succession planning. The next role that we would actually have in the past we'd like to reinstate is actually employee training. When we went through our staffing reductions, one thing we stopped providing was employee training. As software continues to advance, so does the need for ongoing employee training. We used to have training for office products and Excel and Word, and we've had to take that back, and I think that we've seen several areas where we could actually benefit from bringing that back. We'd also like to be more proactive on our updates and monitoring. Currently, we're very reactive to system updates and monitoring. This is especially concerning with the increases we've seen over the years in cyber attacks, and we need to be more proactive as possible, as proactive as possible in order to mitigate, against those threats. We'd also like to be an active resource or an IT liaison to other departments by having regular meetings with department heads in order to identify ways of where IT can actually be of assistance. Right now, we're waiting for them to seek our help. We want to go out to them and actually show them what we can provide. There's several instances that we were working with Mr. Beasley, and him not knowing what we were capable of, even just patching the software, the inspection software, I think that it has those type of benefits. And lastly, we'd like to begin research on grant opportunities that are available in municipal IT departments. We've identified a few grant examples that could assist with our IT infrastructure initiatives and other technology improvements. This brings us kind of to our proposed changes. On this slide, shows the goals that we want to actually accomplish and how we're going to meet those goals. So the first goal that we'd like to accomplish is we'd like to address our current staffing needs based on the technology growth that we've seen in recent years. Our second goal is to accomplish our future vision by adding the new roles that we identified on the previous slide. We also like to introduce clear role separation and provide backup assistance throughout our IT staff. And then we'd also like to promote career progression, improve our retention, and increase our recruitment benefits. So in order to accomplish all of those goals listed above, we're proposing a reorganization of the IT department that consists of two parts, the introduction of an IT manager position and a career ladder. The introduction of the IT manager will allow us to accomplish the top three goals, which are addressing our current staffing needs, adding the additional roles we spoke about, and creating clear role separation and backup. With the introduction of the actual career IT ladder, we accomplish the last three goals, which are addressing career progression, retention, and recruitment benefits. And you'll see that the career ladder would consist of three levels, and the org chart to the right depicts how the new proposed departmental structure would look like. You would have the IT director, still the two specialist positions, but you'd add in an IT manager position.
And in those two IT specialist positions, they would start out as an IT specialist, move to an analyst, and move to an admin if they so progress that way. So on the next slide, we're just showing the recommended role separations that we would be due, that we would accomplish, and by introducing the primary and secondary roles to each position, we're actually accomplishing clear role separation and backup coverage for when we have employee leave or when we have a loss in staff. The IT manager position would be the new staff addition, and the bottom three levels would be actually part of the career ladder. So there would be only two positions in that career ladder, and they would reside at one of these levels here. So what we would do is we would target entry-level candidates at that low level, that specialist position, and once they start to meet all of the system, academic, workplace, and longevity requirements for that particular level, they can move into that next level. The other option is this would afford us the ability to expand our recruitment efforts to well-qualified candidates that may fit at a higher level in the career ladder should the need arise from a limited entry-level pool of candidates. So this career ladder promotes, obviously, an increase in knowledge and responsibility among our IT staff. So there would be seven new roles that would be added that are listed in blue. The italicized blue ones are actually what came out of our vision slide. And you can see that the first few rows of this reorganization allows for IT management to focus more on departmental direction, long-term strategy, and being a full resource slash liaison to other departments without being heavily involved with routine daily tasks. This is our wrap-up slide where we'd like to take a minute to summarize our presentation and provide more information that may help in the decision-making process regarding our proposal. We touched on three major trends during our presentation, which were how technology and IT workload has increased over the years, how our budget is not trending in the same direction as the town or other surrounding municipalities, and how our staffing levels are also not aligning with the town or other local municipalities. We also went over the proposed reorganization, which included the introduction of a IT staff member and career ladder, and have shown the benefits that would have in meeting our current staffing needs and our IT goals. I'd also add that we've met with HR, and based upon our initial discussions about the details of this reorganization, we all seem to be on board with the proposal. We have agreed that career ladders actually fit well within IT departments in general, based on the research that we've conducted about the topic, which is why more and more municipalities are starting to adopt that in their organizational structure. As far as the timeline, you may be asking, why now? I'll start by saying that we already included this in our three-year staffing projection model for the upcoming budget. There are a few projects underway that could also benefit from immediate attention, oversight, and management. Specifically, after speaking with town management and the development services departments, we've identified an immediate need for a project management role in order to manage all the IT aspects of the new development services software project. Since this project involves several departments that are currently overloaded, obviously, with major development going on in the town, this project has been unable to move forward in a timely manner. So we would benefit from having a project manager assigned to further the project along and ensure a successful and timely deployment. The IT manager position would also be great assistance to our department, long-term strategy and planning efforts as we prepare for the upcoming 2020 budget, or fiscal year 20 budget. It's for those reasons that we're recommending a mid-year addition to the IT position. So we've also included, with that, we've included an overall budget impact number for the remainder of the fiscal year. This is a mid-year or January 1 starting date, and also the next
year's full cost projection of adding an IT manager position. This salary, or this estimate, includes salary, Social Security, benefits, insurance costs, and assumes a maximum salary increase and a 10% increase on insurance costs with no offsetting last salary conditions, which would essentially be the worst case scenario. So as far as the cost of implementing a career ladder, there would be no current year costs and only about a $935 potential impact in fiscal year 2020. However, we would actually be able to benefit from the immediate retention and recruitment benefits that actually comes about that. So I will add that we expect the current year budget to impact to be lessened during due to hiring dates and the potential for lapsed salary, and that we may have identified a potential funding strategy for the current budget year. But for that, I'll open the floor for Matt and John to explain anything on that, if they would like to add anything.
I think there's a couple of different options that we could look at for funding this, but the one that seems to make the most sense is related to the development services project, because that's really the impetus behind bringing it to you now. And so it might be better for John to talk a little bit about the need and how that would fit in with the budget for the project.
I think Council probably remembers the discussions we've had over the course of the last couple of years about the need for automation for the development services organization. In the end of the 16-17 budget, Council authorized us taking permit revenues that were above the budgeted target for that year and putting them in a fund that could be used to seed the software project. And that would be service that would be needed to get it started, as well as the initial software licensing to implement that project. Since that time, development has continued to go gangbusters, and we have not been able to figure out a way to carve out time within the existing development services staff to take on the implementation of a multi-departmental software implementation like that. So to Brett's point, we agree wholeheartedly that some type of project management resource is going to be needed to make that a successful implementation, and because it also marries up with some of the needs that Brett sees for the department and projects that resource could be used for after the development services software, we feel like it's a good way to get the project started without having to bring in a special resource or a contract person that might cost even more and could only work on a particular project for us. So we would propose that of the fund that was set aside that was around $200,000, we've only expended a small amount of that for an upgrade to the GIS system that needs to be done as a precursor to the development services software, that the first year budget impacts could come from that fund. That would allow someone to get started, help us make the final decisions about some of the software selections, and then at some point in time we could use the remaining funds that are allocated there for the initial licenses that have to be purchased for the software.
So starting on July 1, it would be incorporated in the regular town operating budget. It would just be that first 6 months or whatever date we were able to bring somebody on through June 30th would come out of the special fund for the software.
So the projected impact, if it started, someone started January 1st, is the $54,000 number, and the $115 number is for that position, salary, benefits, and everything for the next 19-20 year.
Yeah. Assuming those, if insurance increased, so on and so forth. Yeah, that's the full year cost.
What we're looking at right now is increasing from 3 to 4 in staffing, full time. And you have a current part time position you have that helps with police specifically.
Yes.
So you go from 3 to 4 at least. So we're at least adding one person to try to catch up. And this is probably something else that will have to be addressed in the next couple of years, is continuing to add to that department.
Right.
And this is the first step.
Yeah, as part of the three-year plan that we came up with, it was introducing the IT manager position and the career ladder today, and we have no projections to increase staff unless something changes within the town.
Rick, can you tell me what the educational level or minimal requirement would be in hiring a new person in your department? I'm assuming you might promote from within the IT manager itself, but
Yeah, I would. So the requirements would be a four-year degree and IT certifications, and preferably the actual PMP certification, which is one of the highest level program certifications you can get in the industry. That would not be a requirement, but that would be a preference that we would make on it. We currently have somebody that is interested, obviously, in the proposal. This particular person has a double master's degree, has 13 certifications along with that project management certifications as well. So if he chose to apply for that, that can come from within. And then obviously the backfill, if that were to happen, the backfill would lead to a lapsed salary situation, potential lapsed salary situation, and reduce that 54 cost on this year's cost.
I certainly will support your recommendation. Again, my past experience tells me that sometimes the IT department is sort of out of sight, out of mind until something goes wrong with your computer system, and all of a sudden everybody panics, and it's very necessary to have a department that is not strictly reactive but proactive as well. And that's the way I see your proposal this evening, as proactive and planning for the needs we have now, but for future needs as we continue to grow.
Anyone else have questions?
And Brett didn't include that one position he needed just for council support and using their tablets. So
they're experts now.
And I'll have to say that every time I've ever called Brett about anything, his level of patience amazes me, and his ability to communicate with me and get it straight, even over the phone, is fantastic. So I appreciate all your work.
So do we need a formal motion, or is this a thumbs-up sort of process again?
Well, maybe I'll start to come on a concerning
budget. Similar to the last one, it will come back to you for formal action, probably on consent agenda at a future meeting. There'd be the approval to create the position and the budget amendment to line up the funding. So that you'll see it again.
Very good. Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All that just reinforced the thinking that IT changes every day.
Yeah. I shouldn't say this, but anyway, when you see the IT, I remember years ago before IT was in the public mode, if you will, you know, you see the word it.
Yes.
And I knew a few people who were not cognizant of what that was. It reminds me of a former president who parsed the word is and what is the meaning of is. So I guess we've got the meaning of IT here without any problem. Thank you.
Okay, we got the manager reports.
Mr. Mayor, you have in front of you a calendar, a couple of events coming up. I'll talk about that in a minute. We got the Light Up Main at the end of the week, and then following that, the next day we have the Christmas parade on Saturday, and so we have a float secured for council, if you so choose to ride on that. Just get in contact with the clerk and let her know, or the assistant clerk, one or the other. On December 13th, we're going to be having our Employee Recognition and Safety Awards program at the GPAC. It starts at 10:30, and that's where we recognize employees for recognitions and accomplishments throughout the year. And then we also recognize and award employees for being safe and adhering to safety practices throughout the year. So we invite you to spend time with us there. We'll have a lunch following the main program. And I think you also have a flyer about cookies, cocoa, and cider that will be shared here on December 19th. That's the Parks and Rec Initiative that's the Parks and Rec Initiative. We didn't say it on here. Okay. To just show goodwill toward the rest of employees and camaraderie, and they're going to host that here at town hall. Anything else we need to say about that, Matt? You know?
No, other than they felt like, you know, in the old town hall situation, they would routinely see all the employees, but now that the campus has changed and the dynamic has changed, they don't necessarily get to see folks that work on the main town hall campus as much, and they miss that. So that was their one way they were thinking of that would kind of get familiar faces, a chance to see one another again for a brief time at the holidays.
And later this week on Thursday, some of us will be attending the league's goals program, advocacy goals program. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to leave early. I have to attend a funeral for a former coach, high school coach. But I think I know I'm attending Councilmember Marshburn and Sam Bridges, the town lobbyist, will be attending that. And I'm not sure if anybody else signed up for it, but you can sign up on the spot if you choose to go. So the other thing I have is a sample resolution for the potential relocation of the depot, and then also relating to preservation of Garner's history. So we're going to put this on the agenda for Monday night. So if you could read over that, I mean, you don't have to do it now, but I would like your feedback as early tomorrow as possible so we can get this processed and put into your council packet. But thanks to town attorney for getting us started on this, and we reviewed it and got it to this format. So we want to make sure the language is consistent with what you're thinking and the direction you want to go in. So, and that's all I have.
Okay, council, let's start with Greg.
All right. I don't think I mentioned this last week's meetings, but the Veterans Day event we had was a very nice event. Ms. Farringer was there, doing a great job managing it, emceeing it. Appreciate the staff that worked on that. I think Katie worked on that, and that she did a pretty good job. So, and the speaker we had was outstanding. So, want to mention that. Also, want to thank everyone who worked with on the pedestrian signals and signs at the intersection of Avisboro and Buffalo, and also the intersection of Timber and Buckingham, the flashing pedestrian crossing signs. Appreciate people working on that. Appreciate the support of the staff and the council on getting that done. Trying to make those pedestrian crossways a little bit safer. I see these quite often now when I go to other towns. It's becoming more and more common, especially busy walkways and busy roads and towns. Some towns are small towns. I'm surprised to see them there. As a matter of fact, I've not noticed anywhere near the traffic Avisboro and Buffalo has. But they're becoming more and more common to create a safer pedestrian environment. So I appreciate everyone doing that. And maybe next year at the Cookies, Cocoa, and Cider event, and you have it at the rec center. Maybe it'll be open by then. I had my jacket in. I'm sorry. I've been nice lately, so just had to get a shot in there where I could. Speaking of the rec center, do we know? I know there was some issues with the air handlers, and there had to be some redesign that what had been installed may not work, would not work properly. Do we know if that is that in process? I'm assuming, right? Would it be redesigned or reconfigured?
Yes, sir. The last of that I had, which is about a week old, is that they thought they had the solution for two of the three units, and I have not heard an update on the third unit. We do have a construction meeting tomorrow, so we'll be providing an update to council on Monday night, following that monthly construction meeting.
At least that's positive news. That's good. Thanks. That's all I have right now.
Kathy.
Yes, sir. To tag on to Councilmember Singleton's remarks about the rec center, I heard yesterday that the completion date has now been extended to February. Is that a fact or a rumor?
That is the date that we provided council the last update we had. So
they told us that.
Yeah.
I missed that. I thought that we're still on. Okay. Oh, well, maybe I missed that purposely. Maybe I didn't want to think that. Okay. Second thing is I still have Christmas Tour of Homes tickets. I only have five left. So the tour is this coming Sunday. And, again, their tickets are $15 each or two for $25 Sunday afternoon. Okay. And then the third thing we'll share that I went to a Thanksgiving service I did not go. It was held this past Tuesday night at the Capitol Church, and one of the things that the pastor did was to make available to people wristbands that said Thanks Living rather than Thanksgiving, challenged everyone to put it on one arm and if they try to go for 21 days without complaining. And when they first time they complained, they'd take it off and put it on the other arm. I didn't get one. I need one, and it probably wouldn't last 21 seconds. I'm just saying. So that's all I have, sir.
Good.
Switched it back and forth too often.
It would be constant.
Mr. Mayor, the only thing, well, it's already been mentioned, I do plan to attend the Advocacy Goals Conference on Thursday. That's over at the Civic Center, isn't it?
McKimmon Center.
Yeah, oh, is it McKimmon Center?
Convention Center.
Okay, yeah. And I was just going to confirm with the mayor. I believe I have the Wake County Mayor Association dinner. That's going to be in Wake Forest.
Mm-hmm. And Sam's going with Lee Betts' birthday. She's going out. It's a later birthday.
I think I'm signed up to go.
So. Sam's going to take her place.
So we'll see you over there.
Then. All right.
I think other than that, that's all I have for
you. Life on the wall looks good.
It does indeed. Yeah. We've earned it.
Has anybody got anything that's good that they can offer to this council? If not, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So we adjourn.
Second. All in favor, vote by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed.
Amen.
Okay. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Happy
What did he say? What
birthday?
His birthday.
Yeah, that's what she said. Now,
are we going to get this?
Yeah. We get to go home in time now to make tomorrow morning's breakfast tonight.
We just save it for next time.
We keep the baby.
Well, we can save it for next time, but I'll email them this. And well, I'll send you a message out. So we, you can stand.